Sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
Welcome, this is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the Solon ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website cjsf.ca. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-2573. Welcome, welcome to Slumber Party, everyone. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. Thank you so much for being here on this kind of rainy Tuesday. We are here every Tuesday from 6 to 7. And as usual, we have music. We have a topic coming on later on, so stay tuned for that. But we'll start off with the music. This first one that you're already hearing is called Forever by DJ Planet Express in Vivace, and it is hitting all the neurons in my brain. So
there we go,
right word.
Enjoy.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. This is CGSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. You are tuning into Slumber Party, and you just listened to, I believe it was Vicinity by Garnier. That was recent single, and the artist is actually from Vancouver, which is nice. And then the one right before that, you heard Reverie. Reverie, the dub mix by Casey Riot. From her album Subterrane, and she is actually from the Vancouver rave scene as well, so double Vancouver representation. And then I think we had one more before that too, so that was Valley de les Armes by Andre Zimmer and René et Gaston. I'm doing a lot of French here. But that they are from Toronto, so lots of Canadian representation.
Nice. Good EDM songs.
Good EDM. Yeah, we have actually all EDM-ish songs today. So anyways.
Yep, perfect for the topic.
Oh, yeah, perfect for the topic. So segue into our topic. This is kind of the day where we're going to do more of a study or more of a discussion on a case study particularly. So we're going to get a little more into ethics this time. There's this one case that I found that is related to Vancouver scene, and it talks about planetary health, the state of our world. We all know about climate change and everything, and how that compares against clinical autonomy. So what surgeons or hospital staff think is best for the patient. So this is kind of a it's an ethical debate. So there's no right answer in this. But we're going to give some points and see what we think on these things and, what the decision should be. This did happen a couple years ago, so this did happen, and a decision was made. But we'll just talk about it as it didn't.
Yeah, it's like, an experiment of our thoughts and our morality.
Exactly. So I'll just set the case. So I'll just explain the whole case and read it out. So this is set in Vancouver General Hospital, actually. So this is where this case occurred. So starting from the beginning, some background. Modern surgery is a resource-intensive practice, so generates significant waste and greenhouse gas emissions. Vancouver General Hospital is facing pressure to reduce its environmental footprint, specifically targeting the use of desflurane, an inhaled anesthetic that is a potent greenhouse gas, 2,500 times the global warming potential of carbon dioxide. The hospital's sustainability office has proposed removing desflurane from the hospital entirely and replacing it with greener alternatives, such as sevoflurane or propofol, which is an intravenous anesthetic, and mandating a switch also from single-use disposable instruments to reusable, sterilizable ones whenever possible. They're doing this because environmental advocates within the health system argue that the medical profession has a duty to do no harm and that this extends to the planet. They point to data showing that the clinical differences between desflurane and its greener alternatives are negligible for the vast majority of patients. Continuing to use high emission gases for the sake of surgeon preference, they argue, is an ethical failure that prioritizes minor convenience over urgent climate action that affects population health globally. However, many surgeons resist these mandates, viewing them as infringement on clinical autonomy and patient safety. They argue that desflurane allows for faster patient wake-up times in specific contexts, such as obese patients, and that surgeons must have the freedom to choose the tool they believe is best for the individual patient on the table, regardless of the environmental costs. And so it also talks about the resistance against single-use plastics, as surgeons contend that using the single uses or that using reusable instruments, while they are greener, they can carry a slightly higher risk of infection. And if sterilization protocol fails or may or less be precise than brand new disposable tools. They also say that their primary ethical obligation is to the specific patient's immediate outcome and not a theoretical future generation affected by climate change. So if a green alternative is even 1% less effective or harder to use, they argue it is unethical to impose it on a vulnerable patient. So essentially the problem is that Vancouver General Hospital must decide whether to enforce these green OR mandates, which is the removal of this desflurane anesthetic and the single-use plastics into reusable, or that they should prioritize what the surgeon says and do whatever they think is best. So that's the problem at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your initial thoughts about this, TJSR?
For my initial thoughts, I had basically, there's two different sides to this debate, right? Is how much does it impact the environment and what are the consequences? Because you kind of need to weigh both sides of this coin. So when I was looking at it, it seems like the impact to the environment would be, if we're just talking about VGH, would be somewhat small, but they are easily fixable and can be implemented, you know, on a widespread scale if it does catch on to other hospitals. It won't stop any of this, you know, our planet tipping into a temperature that is way too warm, but it will help, you know, it is kind of why not do it? We should be focusing on the ones who are contributing a lot, you know, the meat industry or, you know, corporations that are producing mass amounts of pollution, but that is much more difficult to change because it's so systemic. But this, it's kind of difficult because we can change things within the system, what this case study is talking about, right? It's changing something within the system. But if we don't, you know, actually make big changes to the whole system that's operating like this, then not a lot will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's also part of the discussion is I think we've talked about this before too a bit. I don't think on the radio, but just what can we do as individuals to make our impact on the environment less? And should we do that?
Yeah.
It's almost slightly comparable in that sense.
I think we have with when we talked about mending before, we talked about, you know, being able to mend clothes and thrift things. But overall, you know, what is our individual impact going to do on the entire state of the planet kind of thing? And yeah, I guess that's what the surgeons also argue for, is that, you know, the healthcare system has such a small part of the entire global carbon pollution emissions. And that there are other sectors that obviously do way much more and have an impact. But then it's should we even ignore these little changes in sectors and just prioritize them of that? But how tangible is that as well? So,
yeah, there's a lot of moving background parts going on within this question. But I guess I also wanted to know, what are the actual consequences to human life if we were to, you know, change? And as you said, there is, you know, a higher chance of infection if the sterilization fails. They're less precise, but overall the differences are negligible for most patients. I think a big issue that the surgeons are bringing up is that their clinical autonomy, so their ability to choose what is best for their patient.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of, it is a philosophical issue too, because it's like, okay, you're choosing what's best for the patient in front of you could be at the expense environmentally of people that you can't see and will probably never treat.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's like, because, yeah, you can consider within the medical scope of what they can do, like, okay, sure, we're benefiting this. But then they don't have responsibility for, you know, out in near the equator where people are suffering from heat stroke because we keep admitting carbon emissions kind of thing. They're like, no, we must focus on this one patient because that's their only duty. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that is arguable. Like, from different perspectives, people will argue different things about that. But for the desflurane as well, I know that desflurane, it already does not have really a significant impact on, you know, post-operative complications after surgery. You know, there is reported to be faster wake-up times and slight benefits. But overall, like, I don't think that should be used if it emits, you know, 25,000 times the amount of carbon dioxide. Like, that doesn't justify this slightly longer, slightly faster wake-up time for some patients. And as well with the desflurane, it's already banned or not used in multiple countries. So in England, for example, in early 2024, they don't use it anymore, or they only allow it for certain special cases. So it's not used in routine practice. And as well, the entire European Union also prohibited from this year, January 1st and onwards, unless it's very medical necessary. So I think by also seeing what the other countries are doing about this desflurane particularly, it's like, well, you know, I think we have to kind of go with global consensus in a way and go against their clinical autonomy. But that's still debatable.
Yeah, because even if it's going against clinical autonomy, it's not necessarily threatening human life. Like, it's not sacrificing as much human life that could be sacrificed in the future, because they're talking about, you know, theoretical future generations. Like, why should we prioritize them? But, you know, they're not theoretical, and it's also happening right now. It's not even future generations.
It's like, we have to consider, you know, not even just humans, like, we have to consider humans now, consider humans in the future, children, the animals. Like, we have to, I feel like we have to also consider their health and their, you know, consider their moral, because we can't, are we saying that we are better than them and that we have more moral worth than animals and the environment? It's like,
right?
I feel like we have to consider everything involved over, you know, this specific minority. So it gets really into the idea, and I feel like we're both heading into this theory that it's an issue of utilitarianism, because we are saying to sacrifice or for the greater good to risk these surgery patients for, you know, helping climate change, which will impact everyone.
It is, like, this specific issue I feel like is constrained by the system that we live in, right? Like, we can't make all of these huge decisions that will immediately fix climate change because we're still constrained under capitalism. But I feel like it is a good jumping off point to talk about concepts like utilitarianism, because that's a lot of what climate change justice is kind of about too, is like, we need to make certain sacrifices, obviously, for the majority of people. Like, if we want to decommission like drilling for gas or the mining industry or something, like, we know that people will lose their jobs and probably lose a lot of their livelihoods, and that's going to be difficult to recover from, but it's still, you know, that their contribution to that industry is also what makes it sustain itself and keep harming the environment. So
yeah,
there's a lot of, like, trade-offs that need to be made to make actual progress on climate justice.
And I feel like it's also interesting because people have a pretty negative connotation about utilitarianism, especially now, because it's like, oh, we're not even thinking about, we're just thinking about people as numbers in a way. But I think with this case particularly, because the risk is so minimal to the patients, like faster wake up time and, you know, slightly more infection. Okay, I feel like we can let this happen, especially when it also comes down to the skills of the medical staff as well for administrating these things and doing these things. And it shouldn't surpass, you know, yeah, the suffering of the rest of the world, and especially, you know, disproportionately the people who are disadvantaged and marginalized because we can't see it over here. You know, like we're over here like, oh, sometimes it rains more, sometimes it's hotter in the summer. But then there are people displaced. There are people with infection, like dying from diseases because it was spread by heat and insects through the heat. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it's a hard theory to apply in general, but I feel like, yeah, it does apply in this case.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't think we provided a definition of utilitarianism, but it's basically the greatest good for the greatest majority of people is what's morally right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, yeah, there is, you know, issues with that for sure, such as the tyranny of the majority, where, you know, if it benefits most people but really harms like a select few, then, you know, that's okay and some concessions can't be made for them. But in terms of like the global population, I do feel like utilitarianism could be even more fair than thinking about it from another perspective, because the global majority are also like people of color. Like,
mm-hmm.
We always talk about people of color like, oh, they're the minorities, right? Like in Western culture, but actually globally, like the population, they are the majority. And a lot of places where they live, like DJ Coco was saying, like near the equator and stuff, like those are the ones who are going to be most deeply affected by climate change. So if we look at it from a utilitarian point of view, at least for the sake of this debate or argument, like it kind of makes sense to follow with those conditions, mm-hmm. of utilitarianism, at least.
Definitely. I feel like it could also be debatable, because what would you think if we had the same case, but then those patients would die?
Yeah, like extending it even
like extending
further.
It. Because I think right now it's an easier thing to debate because the risk is so minimal, even though there are objections. But if those patients were to actually die and we would kill Alo, let's say like...
we're going to kill them.
I know. Like somehow they're dying, and now we have to debate if that we should save them or we should save climate change and everyone.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause this isn't necessarily going to save climate change either, because we are still extrapolating like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. this is going to save future generations, but there is something to say for the fact that the like hospitals don't contribute like a ton.
Yeah, it's 5% of 5%. Global carbon emissions, which is like, it's a dent, but it's 95% of it is still left to do. So there, mm-hmm. is something to say about, you know, what kind of dent are we putting on, yeah. of mitigating
and
climate
change. And it
kind
of feels like organizations or even like hospitals, I don't know, was a hospital like an organization or a corporation? Or
neither.
Neither? Well, groups, I guess. What was I going to say, though? No, I lost it. But, oh, I guess like, yeah, groups or organizations or corporations are all putting like kind of, it's almost like greenwashing in a way. Like if, mm-hmm. okay, yeah, hospitals can, you know, eliminate single-use plastics, but there probably is something more that they could do, I wonder. And they're just like, okay, we're facing a lot of pressure to be more green, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, let's do it in this way. And I think a lot of, like, when BC transferred to only, like, no plastic bags being allowed and, you know, no plastic straws or something like that, it genuinely does not have too big of an impact. So that's like another thing just to think about, not necessarily to do with this debate, but
more of a hopeless kind of feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Like how much is this actually going to do, to help people near the equator? You
yeah,
know what I
exactly.
mean?
But
or
then
the
it's
people
like
in global south.
I feel like if also, but if we do nothing, mm-hmm. because within utilitarianism, there's act utilitarianism. And so it considers the morality of the act itself. So for this case, like, one use of desflurane or, you know, one use of the single-use instrument, you know, negligible. But then if we have everyone doing it, like all hospitals in the world, we're all allowing desflurane, we're all allowing single-use plastics, it would have a global impact. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just that jump between how do we get everyone to bandwagon and do this together? But I guess like it has to start somewhere. You
for
know?
Sure, yeah. But I'm not saying we shouldn't
do, that? Yeah.
Do this, but just like in addition to other things. But I also want to go back to, yeah, like if these people were to die from complications by, you know, enforcing a greener system in the hospital. It does kind of lead back to the question too, like we are viewing it as if human life is like the most important thing to protect in the world, right?
Yeah.
And it's really hard not to view issues of morality like that because we are human. We understand, well, maybe we don't even understand how valuable human life is, but that is where a lot of our morality revolves around. And like, if we were to consider the animals and the environment as, you know, also living, breathing things, mm-hmm. how would that change how we make our decisions? If we're always putting ourselves at the top, you know, that's also not going to help us in future generations either. Mm. So
what would your take be then? Let's say that it's the same situation.
It's like, so would you rather
like, would these people die and then you would have an impact on climate change? Like, it wouldn't solve it, but it would help mitigate it.
This how one is close is it to like being mitigated in this hypothetical though? And how many people are dying?
Let me think of some numbers. Let's say we're gonna cut climate change by half, but we have to kill 1 million surgery patients. What do you think now? What are your thoughts? Let's up the stakes here.
I think no. If we are going to be targeting surgery patients as the scapegoats of climate change, like these are the people who probably like do not deserve it. Like, these are just your average person.
Some of these people have cancer. Most of them are elderly, you know. Like, we're just like,
is this the only way to solve climate change? Okay, if I could solve half of it,
like we're not, you know, even half of suffering of all Earth, you know, we're, and I mean half is a lot too. We could,
there's
half
a lot
of our carbon emissions are gone, you know.
If planet. I could choose like the top 1% or something, like all of them, it's a good trade-off, but this is a more difficult moral situation. How about you? What would you say?
I don't know. I've been thinking about it. I'm still leaning on the yes side, to be honest, but...
But imagine that person, like those people who are dying could be like related to you in some way, because that changes as well.
I mean, how related are we talking? If it's like a third cousin, you know, we can sacrifice this.
No.
No.
Like directly related family.
It'd have to fully solve climate change. I wouldn't do
it. Would you sacrifice your own mother for this?
For full climate change?
Yes.
Next question.
We're taking this so extreme.
This is too serious now.
I think that's like almost impossible to answer because it's also just so wrong to sacrifice these people rather than just getting corporations to not even restructure, because I don't even know if restructuring would help, but to be obliterated. I don't know.
I mean, that's the core issue of utilitarianism, that everyone, you know, is why everyone's like, oh, it's considered, you know, kind of old school now, because you don't consider the people involved. Like, It from a utilitarianism perspective, I would have killed my mom to save climate change.
Right.
So, you know, it can't be black and white like that sometimes, because the other theories also say, like, you know, we have to have some sort of morals between the people that we like in our lives. And, you know, there's things like virtue ethics that talk about this, and the ethics of care, you know, that relate to that, and also like surgeon autonomy and caring for the patient too. But yeah, it just always depends on the case, and I think it's hard to stick to one theory all the time.
Yeah, I mean that's morality though too, is like so many schools of thought around morality have a lot of objections and thought experiments where you know, they actually don't work in this situation. Yeah. And you can't actually apply them to all of your whole life. I mean, sucks not to have an easy solution to all of the questions of ethics, but
I don't know how people are just utilitarianism or just this. Like,
yeah, so strictly.
Is that too strict? There's no way. But then it's like, how do we agree on anything, or how do we think things? Like, it's just all up to our feelings at that point.
Yep.
But anyways, I think that's the end of our discussion for there.
And there's a lot of questions in it. We don't really, it's hard to get to the bottom of them too. Yeah. But
morality of a pig, yeah. Morality of animal, you know. But that's another topic we'll have to do in the future.
Yeah, like, what is more important, a human's life or like the life of 3,000 trees, you know what I mean? Like, what is our system of values here?
Yeah, would you kill a human for
3,000 trees?
That's 30,000 trees.
3 million.
Three million.
The trees on earth.
One human.
Yeah. For all the
your
trees
enemy.
On earth, I probably would.
It's your
would.
Enemy too.
Okay. I would not kill my enemy.
For 3 million trees?
Oh, for 3 million. No. Okay. For this specific debate, should they enforce green mandates or leave it up to the surgeons?
Okay,
discretion?
We're going back to the case.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to
let's
bring it back,
up.
Ground us. Once more, in what is tangible?
You don't want to kill your enemy?
I don't have an enemy. I don't think.
Okay, yeah, well, I'm taking things too far. Go back to this.
No, it's good that we're taking it far, but it's just the further we take it, the less answers we will receive. True. So we're trying to leave you all listening with at least a concrete answer on something.
I think yes. I think we should, and the Vancouver General Hospital should, enforce these green mandates because, you know, of this universal consequence of climate change, and because the risks are minimal and they're also minimized because, you know, people can have surgery with a different type of anesthesia, which is considered clinically safe too. So
yeah, I agree. I also say yes. At this point, it's a very easy yes to declare because of the limited risks, but the more risks there are, the more questions there are as to, should we be targeting hospitals, which are where people are most vulnerable, to be the bearers of battling climate change? Or should we, you know, try to restructure or, yeah, change the system that is, you know, most responsible for it?
And the fact that it's not like we're instantly solving climate change, we're not going to really see much difference at all after implementing these measures. But maybe it's just the moral feeling that we've done something.
Yeah, there might be some small impacts, but it's kind of like, oh, going vegan, or, you know, like a community of people doing
going
that.
Vegan.
Yeah, but it's okay. We can get back to the music because we have some good songs left still.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to head back into our EDM accidental special episode because we both chose all EDM, or at least all electronic songs. So this next one is actually more of a low-key or... not slower song, but it's more of a house song, so not as super upbeat. But this one is called Closer Than Before by Fyodor Talmon and Epiro. So, hope you enjoy.
Enjoy.
Recuerdo esa noche de París, tu gusto de morir, yo puesta de carabín, tus ojos mirando mi París. Luego me ofreciste un vaso con Hennessy, bien acelerado.
Atención.
Yuca Stereo. Domingos, 6 a 8 p.m.
90.1
CJSF
Radio.
CJSF
90.1 90.1 FM Yuca Stereo.
Atención.
Bye.
perro partir bebé. Se te abren las pupilas cada vez que me volteas a ver. Yo sé que a ti te encanta todo lo que son no tragos, wey.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. You're tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
Oh, I'm DJ Coco Star. I just yawned.
Yeah, we're just both zoning out immediately. That song that you just heard was Fallen Anyas by Fouda Kouche. And before that was Acceleradas, also by Fouda Kouche, but also MJ Nabrada. That whole album is really, really good. She just released it. You should go check it out. But yeah, I think we're wrapping it up for today. Thank you for tuning in. Next up is Lynn's open mic, and then after that is Bitcoover with our music director, Connor. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. Do we have enough time for a song?
Yeah, we can throw like 1 minute worth of a song.
1 minute worth.
This song is Naima Frank, and it is Ansi Sot Eel.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Encore une nuit bien arrosée, ma valeur s'écoule goutte à goutte, et la taille sur les peaux cassées. Une histoire si bien ficelée, ton amour est fin muselé. Je suis là de celle, mon cœur qui s'est noyé. À qui la faute et qui les mots qui glissent et vite se brisent sur ma peau. Nos larmes séchées encrassent l'écho. La tempête a crisé, le silence sonne. Y'a tes cris qui résonnent. La douleur cogne.
See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.